Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short bedtime tales and modern fables.
This month, we present two short stories. The first one, called Perspectives, evolved out of one of David's school assignments, and the second, called The Mission, from a conversation around our house after Stephen Hawking made his comments on the possibility of alien life at NASA's 50th anniversary. So relax and open your imagination as we listen to Makeshift Stories 28. Somewhere and sometime, there might have been life beyond our sky.
Perspectives by David Hume.
Evasive maneuvers! Lose 'em, and fast, or we'll never see home port, I yelled over the screaming bridge alarms at the frightened pilot.
The war had lasted for generations, but it had been years since anyone in the Outer Planetary Patrol had been attacked. My ship, the Galileo, on a survey mission to unknown space, was not designed for combat. And now, less than a light minute away, we were being chased by our most feared enemy, the Trone, their warship like a hungry lion stalking a baby gazelle, methodically closing the gap between us. Then the lion decided to pounce. The impact from the first angry salvo threw me from my command chair against a bulkhead. Intense pain shot across my back as sparks mimicking my distress flew in all directions, and overloaded circuits strained to absorb the hail of energy that pounded our shields. I knew they wouldn't last. The communications officer frantically relayed what seemed like innumerable damage reports. Still partly stunned, I picked myself up. Our survey ship was small and designed to work in close proximity to objects, so I barked at the navigator.
Quickest vector to any asteroid field, now, no safety margins.
The ship lurched, then jumped momentarily into subspace, re-emerging into reality with way too much velocity for a tightly packed group of protoplanetary material. The Galileo creaked under the heavy G-force of an emergency course correction to avoid hitting a 3-kilometer-wide potato-shaped boulder. The enemy cruiser, too big to enter the rock-infested cloud, hung around for 3 more days before losing interest. Given the extensive damage from our first encounter, I decided to stay in the asteroid field for several more days to ensure the Trone had really gone. So on the 7th day, after the unprovoked attack, we left our makeshift fortress, plotted our course to New Titan, then jumped into the emptiness of subspace. While moving through the undefinable nothingness, I dreamed of New Titan, its azure blue skies, the blue emerald green of its endless tropical islands, and the stunning white cliffs of Pangaea. But this idyllic memory was fractured forever the minute we entered normal space above the embattled world. There'd be no time to wander along an endless beach, if indeed there were still any left. New Titan hung in space like a prized tropical fruit attacked by a cloud of hungry Trone wasps. Everyone on the Galileo is considered a reservist in the defense forces, a holdover from our violent past. So it was no surprise when the call-up orders scrolled down the screen. We were redirected to the planetary defense base on the third moon, Caliban. With resignation heavy in my heart, I ordered the course change. When the navigation computer signaled touchdown, I was immediately directed to the command center, then donned a pressure suit and ran in large bounding strides across the dusty surface in 1/4 standard gravity from the landing site to a heavily reinforced building. Small, lazy clouds of dust, picked up by my boots, marked my progress. In the vacuum of Caliban, they might remain for centuries as a last testament of my devotion to duty. Pushing that thought out of my mind as the airlock cycle completed, I burst through the inner door into the chaos of the command center. Years of training kicked in, as they automatically took the nearest vacant seat in front of a tactical display. Red icons glowed anxiously on the screen, demanding my attention. Then from nowhere, one loomed menacingly close, and without hesitation, I targeted it and hit the launch button. A prism of energy flooded the electromagnetic spectrum, and the accompanying roar seemed to shake my bones as I lost consciousness. I awoke in the antiseptic air of a ship's medical center.
How long?
I moaned. There was a moment before one of the doctors heard me and realized I was awake. The answer shocked me. I had lost 4 weeks of my life.
Sir, you must take it easy,
she told me.
You were luckier than most in the new Titan action, but you've had extensive reconstructive surgery. Your sector commander will come and explain.
She left, and I fell back into a deep sleep that was haunted by ghostly dreams of a half-remembered life. Time slipped by at an indeterminate rate. Then either hours or days later, I couldn't tell which, a weary, distinguished-looking man appeared, dressed in a well-worn officer's uniform that looked like it hadn't been changed in weeks. He asked if I remembered what had happened, and I told him I couldn't recall anything beyond waking up here, not even my name.
"You won't remember this, then,"
he explained in an emotionless tone.
"But a missile almost wiped out your station.
Our ship left port almost 3 months ago on a routine survey mission. At least it was a routine mission until we discovered the interloping ship. A survey vessel from the aggressor's fleet, well inside our domain. It tried to evade us by hiding in an asteroid field. So we waited and hid ourselves. We lay quietly for more than a week, and our patience finally paid off. We were able to follow the transgressor to its base on a moon. Our fleet was already there, engaged in a heroic response to the aggressor's recent irresponsible and illegal actions in our territory. You managed to launch a decisive counterstrike that eventually turned the action in our favor. Then, your section of the ship was hit by a missile from the moon's surface. Congratulations. You're a hero. He paused and then added in a quiet, disgruntled tone, for whatever that's worth, in the ashes of our fleet. His duty performed, he abruptly left, leaving me in an uncertain state. I drifted back to sleep and dreamed of a sandy beach in a more peaceful time and place. The Mission. Recording start. Shipboard elapsed time, 1,000 years, 0.00053 days. Elapsed ground time, 100,000 years and 53 days. I am sending this as a generational attempt at contact as required by mission directives. We have not heard from Sol System within the current generation's lifetime, and so this record summarizes our findings to date. We finally decided to use an electromagnetic message in a bottle, if I remember the ancient reference correctly. We have cast this adrift at the 1420.406 megahertz spectrum, otherwise known as the hydrogen line, and continually re-aim our antenna, so we eventually broadcast in all possible vectors. We have been doing this since I was born, just after the last report and contact, 40 years, shipboard time. After some considerable debate, the same one there has always been around announcing our presence and our location to an unknown and potentially more advanced civilization, our parents decided to preface the message with the approximate coordinates of the Sol System, triangulated by three of the strongest known quasars. The argument has always referenced the fate of Mesoamerica after European contact. but given the extended duration of our search and its negative results to that point, our experts firmly believed that the risk was negligible and justified. The following message was and continues to be broadcast. We send you greetings, offers of friendship, intellectual exchange, and trade of goods and knowledge. We are peaceful. The message header includes the usual Rosetta Stone key for translation, the location of Seoul as mentioned previously, and a description of our mission purpose and planned course. To this, we have received the static of the cosmic background radiation. And our planetary surveys have only turned up organic molecules, or simple microscopic life forms, or worlds that may have held promise in the ancient past. It is as if we are too early or too late, and always in the wrong place. In reality, the length of our trip is only marginally greater compared to the life of the universe than the area of space we have explored to the size of the galaxy. Both represent an almost negligible percentage of all conceivable possibilities. But may or could be was not what we were sent out here to find. Our multi-generational mission remains to answer the question once and for all. Are we alone? The implications of the answer having inconceivable and far-reaching effects for us, no matter which conclusion is reached. We have been searching now for more than 100 millennium Seoul elapsed time and have yet to find any intelligent life. At first, we may be tempted to conclude that for all practical intents and purposes, we are indeed alone. Space and time appear to have conspired against us in our need to answer the question more completely. Yet, we have barely surveyed our own stellar backyard. And, after more than 100,000 years, all we can say for sure is it appears that no one is sharing that minuscule part of time and space with us. Recording end. Transmit. Thanks for listening to Makeshift Stories 28, Somewhere, Sometime, Perspectives and the Mission. We hope you enjoyed the stories tonight. Please tell your friends about us, and we'd love to hear from you. So send us an email at makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. The opening theme for Somewhere, Sometime, Glimpse of Happiness by Matt Nantel, is PodSafe Music, licensed from Premium Beat. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative License, which means that you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.